You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. A lot coming up today. John Guerin is going to be with us in just a moment talking about the Catholic bishops pushing back on Paul Ryan and John Boehner and Eric Cantor and this whole right-wing bunch. Greg Palast is going to be with us in our third hour today. We've got a lot of fascinating stories in the news. Brian Sussman on Fox says, I'll get to that in just a minute. But first, let me get John on here. John Guerin with faithinpubliclife.org. Do I have that right, John?
Yes, that's right.
Last night we had it on a Chiron on the TV screen, but on the radio, I got to read it. You are the senior writer and Catholic outreach coordinator for the Faith in Public Life organization.
Yes, that's right.
And welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Are you principally representing yourself as a Catholic organization or as a Christian organization?
We're a Christian organization. I do a lot of Catholic. I'm Catholic myself, and I do a lot of Catholic outreach work for Faith in Public Life.
Okay. And what are your thoughts, or what are your organization's thoughts? First of all, what do the Catholic bishops have to say about the Paul Ryan budget?
Well, they have some pretty stark words to say about it. They've written a flurry of letters to the House, specifically challenging this GOP budget for really failing a moral criterion that they've laid out to protect the poor and most vulnerable. So, you know, several letters to House committee chairmen have been very clear, very specific. The bishops have been particularly outspoken on Ryan's effort to cut the food stamp program. So, you know, these are really clear and compelling arguments from a moral perspective that Ryan seems to be ignoring. I mean, he went on Fox News just today and said something pretty stunning. He said, look, you know, I respectfully disagree. These are not all the Catholic bishops. Well, that's really incredible, isn't it? I mean, now Representative Ryan is not only cherry-picking from Catholic social teaching, he's now the arbiter of who the relevant bishops are. You know, clearly he doesn't understand how his own church works. The bishops who sent these letters are the chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Committees on Domestic Justice and International Justice and Peace. So these bishops are elected by their brother bishops, all 260 of them, at a national meeting, and they do speak for the church on these matters. In fact, the Hill newspaper has a story up right now where they called the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to try to get a comment about Ryan's dismissal of this. And the USCCB said, yes, you know, this speaks for our church on this. So it's really stunning that he wants to have this debate because he's losing it.
Yeah, it seems so. And this, you know, frankly, we could take this out of the realm of religion entirely and just, you know, position it as a moral thing or as just a human thing to do. But the reason why I think it's particularly interesting to talk with somebody like yourself who is working in the field of religion and speaking out on these things and talking about, you know, connected with and talking about what the Catholic bishops are all about is that that's the frame that the Republicans have historically used to push this kind of stuff, which just boggles my mind. How can you possibly distort Christian teachings or Jewish teachings or Muslim? I mean, fill in the blanks, right? But in this case, Paul Ryan's Catholic. He's cited his Catholicism and his Ayn Randism. Those two things are inconsistent. Ayn Rand, in order to be a member of her cult, you had to declare that you were an atheist. But I suppose that's a whole separate thing. In any case, how does he square that circle? How do these Republicans square that circle?
I don't know. I mean, it's got me baffled. You know, as I think you noted, the bottom line here is you just can't twist and distort church teaching to fit an ideological agenda that's really more in line with the Tea Party. You know, Speaker Boehner and Representative Ryan don't seem to understand that. I think what's particularly outrageous about Representative Ryan is he seems to be fancying himself kind of an armchair theologian here. You know, he fancies himself very well versed in Catholic theology, and we appreciate the fact that, you know, he takes our Catholic social tradition seriously. That I think that's important, and it can inform some of our debates on these issues. But, you know, he really misrepresents and distorts it. And when he's told again and again, you know, just last week, prominent Catholic theologians, Catholic sisters, social justice leaders, and now the bishops we've seen have come out and say, look, you've got it wrong. he doesn't seem to be getting the memo, and I don't really understand that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking.
And also, I would add too. You know, when he made these comments on Fox today, that the bishops who have been sending these letters don't speak for all bishops, I would say, you know, if Representative Ryan has a personal hotline to some special Tea Party bishops or bishops who are sitting around reading Ayn Rand who would defend this irresponsible budget, you know, he should let us know that, because, you know, clearly the Catholic bishops have been very strong in their opposition to the GOP budget. And why that's not sinking in, I'm not quite sure.
Well, and this isn't the first time that the Republican Party or conservatives or war hawks or whatever, you know, fill in the blank. I don't want to make this entirely partisan, because there were Democrats as well who were gung-ho to bomb Afghanistan and Iraq. But it isn't the first time that the church has come out and said, hey, wait a minute, human lives are at stake here. That's a higher that's the highest value, or one of the highest values, the highest value, I suppose. And for example, George W. Bush wanted to have his war. Pope John Paul II said, no, please don't do that.
Exactly right. You know, I think you see a lot of cherry picking when it comes to Catholic social teaching. And, you know, to be fair, I think, you know, folks on the left and right do it to some extent. But, you know, it's particularly egregious when you have folks like Representative Ryan and Boehner who specifically are citing Catholic teaching incorrectly, and then they're told by the Catholic leaders,
by their own church,
that you've got it wrong. You know, look, I mean, and to take it out of the realm of morality and compassion for a second, we can talk about it in a way, you know, there's an effectiveness argument here too when we're talking about food stamps. It's not simply about compassion. It's not something that only bleeding heart liberals can support. The fact is, last year, 1 in 6 Americans lived below the official poverty level, and over 46 million Americans, almost half of them children, used food stamps for basic nutrition. So the Census Bureau has reported that the program lifted about 5 million Americans over the poverty level in 2010, and without those food stamps, the poverty rate for children, you know, children who the values crowd in the GOP, you know, you would think they would care about that, the poverty rate would have been over 21%. So, you know, I'd like to hear Republicans who take the values vote seriously and who claim to own this kind of monopoly on the values dialogue. I'd like to hear, you know, how they justify programs that are going to be devastating to children and families. That just seems incomprehensible to me.
Well, you know, we have heard them justify it, and Paul Ryan came out and said, if we don't cut these programs, they're going to cease to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he says that he's, you know, I guess we're destroying them to save them.
Well, you know, on the point that here's how Paul Ryan justifies it from a Catholic social teaching perspective, and this may be a little bit in the weeds from some of your listeners, but I think it's important.
We have just a little less than a minute.
Okay. So. He talks about the Catholic principle of subsidiarity, which subsidiarity is, you know, the closest you are to the problem. So families, local governments, churches should be the ones who take care of these issues. Well, the other part that he forgets in Catholic social teaching is the issue of solidarity, which is you can't have subsidiarity without solidarity. And, you know, during a time when we know our local governments are already struggling and families are struggling, the Catholic social teaching would say the role of the government is key. You know, Catholic social teaching for centuries has not been an anti-government movement by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
And so it seems to be that he's trying to fit a very narrow political agenda into a church tradition that just doesn't represent that kind of thinking. So I don't know how he gets away with that. And, you know, he's not getting away with it, which is the good thing. The bishops are pushing back. Theologians are pushing back. And, you know, hopefully soon he'll get the memo.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's and well, yeah, well said. We're out of time here. John Gehring, faithinpubliclife.org, the website. Yeah, the senior writer and Catholic coordinator for Faith in Public Life. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much.
Great talking with you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So the Republican Party has taken on God. Who's next? Well, unless you're a Republican, you like to use his name a lot, but not so much the teachings. Welcome back. Now it's President Obama threatening a government shutdown. I find this absolutely fascinating. There have been three, I believe, times up until this point in time where the Republicans and the president basically were going to have it out, right? It was going to be high noon or whatever. Pick your crummy metaphor. Let's try not to pick ones that involve guns. Anyhow, they were playing chicken, as it were. Oh, that involves cars. Whatever. You get the point. And the president, every single time, has blinked at the last minute and said, okay, I'll give you, for example, the Republicans were saying, we want to cut unemployment benefits. And the president was saying, we want to have 99 weeks of unemployment benefits. Now, you know, most of fully developed countries around the world, you have unemployment benefits until you get a job. Because the concept is that you have a right to a job. That's one of the reasons why we create a government and a civil society, is so that people can work, so they can have a means to support their families, so that they can be functional in society. It's part of that right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness stuff. And so most countries say, you know, if you're unemployed, it's a failure of us, and we're going to cover your backside. You know, we've got your back here. So anyhow, the president wanted 99 weeks. And the Republicans wanted 49 or 50 weeks, or something like that. Really what they want is nothing. Right? Because, how dare these people who have lost their jobs just not get another job? Even though I can tell you, as an employer, we've hired twice in the last year and a half or thereabouts. And each time, three times actually, including the TV show, each time we put an ad on Craigslist or in the paper or whatever, and literally get hundreds of responses there's a lot of people who are just, you know, scattershotting everything, but a lot of qualified people. There are a lot of people out of work right now. So the Republicans say, out of work, screw them. In fact, if they've got a job, if they get a job, a low-paying job, let's increase their taxes. Paul Ryan budget. The Romney budget, both of them, cut taxes on millionaires and billionaires, increase taxes on the working poor and the average working person. So, because then they'll have, quote, skin in the game, end quote. So the president worked out this deal about a year and a half ago, or about a year ago, that the deal was, instead of the 99 weeks of unemployment benefits that we want, we will give Americans 76 weeks, I believe it is. It might be 74. It's right around 75 weeks of unemployment benefits. And then they run out and they're out of luck. And, you know, I said, I think this is a bad deal because these benefits are going to run out just before the election. You're going to have a lot of people in a lot of pain. The Republicans are trying to maximize the economic pain to America in the months running up to the election, so that in November people will, you know, typically when the economy really stinks, people blame the president. And so the Republicans are doing absolutely everything they can to make the economy as bad as possible and to hurt those people and to squeeze those people who are having a hard time, so that they'll get so angry that come November they will blame President Obama and they will vote in Mitt Romney. Because he's going to run on a platform of that he's such a successful billionaire or multimillionaire running multi-billion dollar companies, that he can run the government as well. Now, I would submit to you that there's a big difference between running the government of the United States and buying up companies, gutting them, sending their manufacturing overseas, and then flipping them and selling them and calling it some kind of business practice where when you do so, you pay a maximum 15% income tax on your return rather than, you know, like the president of name the company, right? The CEO of General Motors, on his income, he pays income tax up to 36%. Mitt Romney pays a maximum of 15% because it's a pump and dump operation. He's a bankster. But anyhow, he's going to run on this platform, and there's going to be people who believe him. Well, the guy is, he's worth $200 million. He must know how to do something. And they're going to say, you know, Mitt Romney made himself rich. Now, ignore the fact that he was born a millionaire. He made himself richer, just like Donald Trump, just like George W. Bush. They're going to run on this platform. If he made himself rich, and you can too, This is the thing. You know, Americans, working class people in Greece are out in the streets. Working class people in the UK are out in the streets. Working class people in France are, you know, in the countries, not so much France right now, in Spain, you know, they're having some problems. Where the, when the banksters come in and wreck things, working class people know that they're working class people and they're getting shafted by the banksters. They get it. They got it figured out. In Iceland, they didn't even go into the streets. They went to the ballot booth and said, no, we're not going to pay back the banksters. Twice they said it. But in the United States, Fox News and right-wing talk radio and all, they have managed to convince everybody that we're all just one lottery ticket away from being multimillionaires. You never know. You might get the winning number. And lottery ticket sales are much higher in red states and in red state areas than they are in blue states and blue state areas. Literally, working class Americans and poor Americans think of themselves as temporarily inconvenienced millionaires. Many of them. And so when their guy, the millionaire, the multimillionaire, the multi-hundred millionaire, Mitt Romney, comes along and says, hey, I can make you just like me, there's some people who are going to say, oh, okay, we'll do that. This is the problem of the low information voter. It's the problem of the fact that radically more Republicans than Democrats, and certainly more Republicans and centrist Democrats than even progressives, are showing up on the Sunday talk shows. This is the problem with our media in general.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And this is the crisis that America is facing. I got to tell you about the children in, for example, just in California, getting kicked out of their homes. What does this do to somebody?
Yeah, I told you to. I did what I had to do.
There's a new report out from First Focus and the Brookings Institute, or I think it's Institution, but in any case, Brookings. More than 8.3 million are facing the direct consequences of home foreclosures. This is, you know, ever since George Bush crashed the economy, or 30 years of Reaganomics set it up to explode, and it blew up in George Bush's face, more than 2 million children have seen their homes foreclosed on, just since 2008. And another 6 million are at risk of being foreclosed on. Just consider the psychological consequences of this. Kids need to grow up in a world knowing that their parents have some, you know, that there's some stability. There's some central power. Not to sound like an authoritarian, but to feel safe. To know that, you know, they're not going to be kicked out of their house tomorrow. That you know, the street's not going to explode when they drive down it. Well, not getting kicked out of your house, that's a pretty big deal. That there's going to be enough food. Well, now Paul Ryan wants to take away the food. Yeah, let's get rid of food stamps. But just consider the impact of this on kids. This is a genuine rolling tragedy. And the president has come out and said that he wants to do something about the Republicans are filibustering it. They just, you know, 2 days ago in the United States Senate. They call it Marxist redistribution of wealth, right? Having Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac write down home mortgage amounts to what the home is actually worth right now because people got scammed by banksters. It just amazes me. Just absolutely amazes me. Donald in Hubert, North Carolina. Hey, Donald, what's up? Donald? You got to listen to your phone, not your TV. Jerry in Chicago. Hey, Jerry, what's up? Jerry's not there either. Okay, let's try Tracy in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Tracy. Tracy, if we got three in a row, we've got a problem. Hello? Okay, I'm going to try Jason in San Antonio, Texas. Jason, can you hear me? I think we've got a problem with our phone system. Let's try Greg in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Greg, can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Greg. Okay. Greg? Jason. You can't hear me, can you?
Jason, can you hear me?
Okay. We're going to have to... Oh, try it now. Okay, Greg, you're going to have to call back. Jacob just did something and thinks he's fixed it. John in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, John, can you hear me now?
How you doing, Tom?
It's like a bad cell phone commercial. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can. Moments ago, okay. I lost you for a minute there. Okay. So
Jacob has figured out what the problem was, so anybody who I just dumped, which was everybody I called on, you know, give us a call back. So.
Yeah, and thanks for letting me cut in line, by the way.
Okay, so what's up?
Good on them. So anyway, I wanted to let you know about the situation with the food stamps, but if I could just spend 10 seconds to give you a little background. I was hit by a drunk driver about a year ago in a crosswalk.
Ouch.
Who was fleeing from the police.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the lawsuit didn't cover my medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So food stamps, you know, I've been a Mason my whole life. I'm a third generation Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And this is hard to talk about for me, but the food stamps were something that my mom used when my dad was in Vietnam. And, you know, basically when I was a young boy, she got through on those food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And I used them once before myself when I was out of work for a little while. You know, it helped me get by.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I received a card. And the problem is I've talked to a lot of people, the same thing. We fill out our monthly stuff just like we always have. And the card cancels for no apparent reason.
Hmm.
When you try to call the state about that, they will straight up tell you that your wait time is 4.5 hours.
You're actually dealing with a bank, not the state.
Right. Well, you're dealing with the state. When you do finally get a hold of them, they say, sorry about this. And what I was told by a woman, now I don't know if this is true or not, but I was told that the worst part of it that she knows about is the fact that Bank of America is getting $200 every month for the fact that I am signed up to food stamps. I receive $130
yeah.
in food stamps. And I do.
I can guarantee you they're not getting that much money. But the tragedy here is, A, that the government can't respond to this because of all these budget cuts that have been going on.
Yeah, there's no way to fix it.
At the state and federal level, as long as there are hiring freezes on, it's going to take time to get through to people. And this is the insanity. It's like you would think that Republicans would get it, that when the government is needed the most, you might need a little more government.
This is what changed my, you know, Tom, I grew up in California. I had big hair, big green hair in the 80s,
okay.
And I had a very anarchist philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized, as I became a worker, you know, I realized that we're all kind of in this together, man.
Yeah.
And you know, anyway, I saw the housing as a builder. I saw the housing crash coming. My wife and I, we talked about it. You know, we knew it was coming because
yeah.
it's just a matter of
well,
time.
Well,
anyway,
it pretty much hit the street in 2006. I mean, it was apparent that it was coming a year or two in advance.
Right. But my main point is that I think that there's a crisis in California around the food stamp situation.
Yeah.
Because I've talked to so many people, they give up. They don't try
yeah.
to renew their paperwork correctly. They get canceled for no reason, and they can't get back on the program. Their worker tells them, you have to start over. You have to wait 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a genuine tragedy. John, thank you for the call. This is, as I said, you know, when we need our government, that's the precise moment when the Republicans come along and say, government's a bad thing. Let's get rid of it. Henry in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Henry, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Fine.
The bottom line is, I'm going to get to it pretty quick. You know, these Republicans, we're looking at it on a national basis, thinking, you know, how bad things are and what they're trying to do right here in front of us. But to me, that's just a diversion for what they're doing at the local level, which really, to me, amounts to criminal acts. Because, say, for instance, I live outside Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
All right? These Republicans are convinced, and I hate to say it like this, but I'm going to say it, idiots in Memphis City to vote and turn the city schools over to the county. But this is the catcher. Everything that's in the county is paid for by the city. you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then, after they turn the control over from the schools to the county, and they got to pass through the state legislature, which is also criminal, because the way they're doing things behind closed doors in the middle of the night,
yeah.
And then they turn around, and then the rich people in the county got permission from the state to build their own school in the county using city school fund.
Right. So the poorer inner city is subsidizing the wealthier outside the city folks. And I'm guessing that there's probably, in addition to that, I'm guessing that there's probably some private charter schools involved in this, skimming some money off the top as well.
This is the killer part. They are closing a lot of neighborhood schools to justify the money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Henry, thank you very much for the call and for the heads up on it. Tracy in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm calling to dispute the spin on the Secret Service bad apples.
Yeah.
That, you know, it was an isolated incident, because it's standard operating procedure for the Secret Service to come into third world countries and solicit prostitutes. Because
how do you know?
When I was in the Philippines as security police, Air Force Two came in with Dan Quayle and the Secret Service, and the Secret Service were bragging that they slept with 5 prostitutes apiece, and they made fun of Dan Quayle for only sleeping with 3. So
Tracy, I thank you for the call. I am suspicious of your factoids, but you know, if the Secret Service, if this is what these guys are up to, they need to clean house. You know, I don't see this as a conservative or liberal issue, or a political issue. Although certainly there's a bunch of politicians or a bunch of commentators trying to make it a political issue, I guess because President Obama happens to be the president. But this is not about him or his presidency. This is about the Secret Service. And they do need to clean that up right away. And I think they are. John in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, not much. Tom, thanks for taking my phone call. I called one other show because I was furious about our health care and how we go about it. We are going to add millions of people onto this new health care Obama has. But we haven't done anything as an infrastructure to recruit new doctors, get the best and brightest minds, build hospitals, make sure Medicaid and Medicare don't short pay them to the point where they're only taking 5 or 10% when they see new patient pools. And we haven't even gotten down to the bottom of it as far as how do we make this effective once people are actually in there. And we hear all these other different stories that people are doing this, but both...
Well, hang on just a second here, John. Your argument assumes that because people don't have access to a way to fund health care, that they're not using health care services. And the fact of the matter is that they are. They're showing up at the ER.
Absolutely. We're still paying for it. That's
I know. And we're paying a lot more than we will pay if everybody can see a primary care doc. Now, I give you that we need a lot more primary care docs. And we need to get... Yes, absolutely. And we need to get the AMA out of the way. We need the certification process for medical schools. Basically, what they've been doing is they've been controlling and regulating the supply of doctors and now physicians, assistants, and nurse practitioners in a way that
Let me stop you there. But for a good specialist, Tom, it takes anywhere from 6 to 10 years, depends on the specialty. We haven't addressed that. We haven't talked anything about that. We're almost 6 years behind.
And you're right. And we need more medical schools, and we need more funding for people to go through medical school. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Which brings up the larger issue of our entire intellectual infrastructure, what John was just talking about. We haven't been funding it because Republicans say, no, can't fund anything now. So who are they going to blame? This is clip number one, Jacob. This is incredible. I mean, this is the setup. This is what you're going to have coming at you, is that any attempt to regulate billionaires like the Koch brothers with regard to their pollution of their companies, or multimillionaires like Mitt Romney with the destruction of businesses and offshoring of products and basically making money with money by the banksters like Romney, any attempt to regulate any of that is communism and Marxism. And here's Brian Sussman on Fox Television.
The problem is the environmentalists have never liked progress and they've never liked capitalism. This is a long-running plot, quite frankly, concocted in the minds of Karl Marx and Frederick Engels. Use the environment to hammer capitalism. Use capitalism's pollution to absolutely hammer free markets. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. So you don't have a right to clean air. You don't have that right. The government should not have the power to say to you know, Coke industry, sorry, you've got to clean up your pollution. No. And if the government says that it wants to do that, if we, the people, decide that we would like our air to be breathable, that's Karl Marx and Frederick Engels. Right. Janice in Schaumburg, Illinois. Hey, Janice, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm calling because I saw last night on C-SPAN some discussion with some Democrats over the increase of the interest rates on the Stanford loans. They're going to be doubling those.
These are student loans.
Student loans, yes. Yeah. Could you go into that a little bit? Where's the rationality in that it's okay to raise the interest rates on student loans, but I can't earn any money in my investment banking account?
Right. I don't know the details on the Stanford loans. Stanford loans, they're called? Is that
yes, Stanford
yeah.
loans.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't speak to that specifically. I do know that student loans in general have governments subsidized. Used to be that the student loans were all being run, being backstopped by the government, but by being run by private banksters. And so they were, you know, making a pretty penny off this thing. And President Obama came along and said, no, not going to do that. We're going to have the federal government, through Sallie Mae, directly loan money to people. And the banksters got cut out of the loop. But it saved the government about $80 billion that was going to the banksters. And it lowered the rates for student loan, you know, the interest rates somewhat. And then, you know, let's try to also make it up with Pell Grants. In other words, just give tuition to people who deserve it, who financially need it and who have the ability to go to college. The Paul Ryan budget eventually would end the Pell Grants or cut them down to the point of meaninglessness. And the Republicans are already pushing hard to destroy those, to cut them back. And, you know, with regard to the student loans, they've been yelling and screaming that this was communism. You know, this is a government takeover of the student loan business. Well, it was. And it was a good thing, and it helped people out. Now, where they're going with this or who's driving it, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to your question, Janice, but that's the backstory, and I think that's an important starting point anyway. Karen in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Yes. Hey, Tom, how are you? I'm so glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
Sometimes there's people like us common citizens don't have the platform like you, Ed, and Rachel, and those guys. You guys are great. I'll make this really quick.
Sure.
You're talking about gutting companies and things of that nature. Somebody really needs to bring to the platform about Bain Capital. If you Google or Wikipedia HCA, you'll see the connection with Bain Capital. And I've actually talked to some of the people who work for that organization, and they were saying that before they had great benefits, now their insurance is like $500 to $600 for two people. You have no workman's comp, even if you're injured on the job. That's almost unheard of in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's not that. It's not just HCA. There's a whole variety of companies. I was very close to some very people that I worked with and know very well whose company was acquired by Bain Capital. And this was after Romney had left it. I mean, you have to put the caveat on. But this is basically the standard operating procedure. They came in and they basically fired anybody who had a decent paycheck, took away benefits, did away with the right to unionize, and they're still slashing. I mean, it's just, you know, Bain, they're sharks. They're sharks. And
so my question is to him, if I ever saw him, I would ask him, this is not class warfare. Only thing I would like to ask you is that how is it great for American people that you come through the back door, they're making, say, $20 or $30 or whatever in an hour, and then you cut them straight in half. How is that great for the American people?
Well, it's not. Because that's how Mitt Romney made $20 million bucks last year, though, and paid 15% income tax on it. I mean, that's what it's about. Okay. But your point is really well made. Thank you very much, Karen, for the call. Susan in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, long-time listener, first-time caller, but I had to call about the foreclosure issue. I'm presently been fighting foreclosure for about 3 years.
Ouch.
I've taken it to court. We've stopped the sale twice. I mean, it's been incredible. But I wanted to tell your listeners that most of the foreclosures that are occurring are fraudulent.
Yes.
What they did was they securitized, MERS gave assignments. They give fraudulent documents. They're lies. They don't answer the questions clearly. Our particular case, there's no clear chain of title. So the plaintiffs have no standing, and it was actually the servicer of the loan that started the foreclosure process. So it just happened that a case in Hawaii, the judge, a wonderful man named Seabright, Michael Seabright, awarded the defendants, the homeowners, their home because it clearly there was no standing. So I just want to encourage people, don't just let them take your home.
Right.
This was a
find a lawyer and fight back.
Job.
Yeah, find a lawyer and fight back. And hopefully more state attorneys general will be able to do that. You know, there's this deal they've been talking about cutting with the banksters, where the banksters kick in a bunch of, you know, $30-40 billion, something like that, to a fund, and you know it's going to make everything well, and nobody's going to go to jail. It's nonsense. And
no, they've fabricated documents. They have lied. This was totally set up, I mean, to take us all down. And I just don't understand. If we're faced with 8 million foreclosures across this country, isn't that a huge red flag?
It you would think. You would think. And we need to, and it is something we need to do something about. Susan, thank you very much for the call. And step number one, wake people up. Here we are. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Conservative bias. Just consider this for every year. A new study comes out about the conservative slant on Sunday morning TV talk shows. It's like every year for as long as I can remember, these reports have been coming out. This latest one is from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. They looked at four Sunday talk shows on NBC, Meet the Press, on CBS, Face the Nation, on ABC, the show This Week, and on Fox, Fox News Sunday. And what they found was that these Sunday morning talk shows are, to quote them, extraordinarily friendly terrain for the right. 70% of them, or 70% of the time, the shows featured one-on-one interviews with Republicans. 70% of all the one-on-one interviews, they were not with Democrats, they were with the Republicans. 70% of them. There were 166 Republicans on these shows, 70 Democrats. When they did those were one-on-one interviews. When they did panel discussions, 282 appearances by conservatives, 164 by progressives. So where exactly is the liberal slant in this media? Not to mention the most popular cable news network, picking up more viewers than CNN and MSNBC combined, is Fox so-called News. Conservatives absolutely dominate the Sunday shows and the weeknight cable news shows. They also dominate talk radio. You know, according to talkers, only 3 out of the top 10 radio hosts, Ed Schultz, me, Joe Madison, in the country are progressives. Fair also found that beyond politics, there's also a sex and race slant, too, on the Sunday shows. Only 29% of guests were women, 11% were African Americans, 3% Latino, 85% of the guests were white. So even though President Obama is right that it would be Republicans responsible for a shutdown of the government, and this kind of tracks back to how is he going to deal with this? He has said, come September, the Republicans made this deal with him earlier in the year, that they would not shut down the government if he would cut about 25, 30 weeks of unemployment from average working Americans. And he signed on for that deal. Unemployment went from 99 weeks down to 76 weeks. For a lot of people, it's going to expire just in time for the election, which is what the Republicans were trying to do, maximize the political pain. But what they gave up in exchange for that was a commitment not to have another budget debate before the elections. The president signed that in good faith. He said, okay, fine. You know, he let them cut the number of weeks that people can get unemployment benefits. This is an further extension. So he could win the fact war. I mean, there's no doubt about that. John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and President Obama made a deal that there would not be any more right-wing crazy stuff budget-wise coming out of the House of Representatives or the Senate between now and the election. They made a deal. And the president paid a huge price for that deal. Because by cutting those unemployment benefits, he reduced the stimulus to the economy. And, you know, threw some people over the edge of the boat. I mean, tragically. But it was the only way. I mean, the Republicans made it very clear. These are the terms. If you want to have the government function at all, you got to throw these guys overboard. And he said, well, in that case, then don't do this to me again. Don't walk me right up to that wall again and say, you know, this is it. So now the Republicans are saying that they're going to do this. I would say that the days of media reporting the news are gone. They've outsourced that job to political talking heads. The facts are history. In fact, the facts probably won't even be mentioned. As this study shows, there are more right-wing talking heads than progressives, even more right-wing talking heads than just normal Democrats. So walk carefully, President Obama. This is going to be a really interesting one. It's going to be a very interesting one. In Denver, the Denver Health Department, this is the group, you know, they run the state mental hospital, I guess. I don't have all the details on this. There's still a number of reporters who are looking into this thing. But it appears that what they're doing is they're dropping off people who are being deinstitutionalized out of mental hospitals at Occupy Denver. Here's a clip. You can see the video of this over at democraticunderground.com. Here's a clip from that.
So I'm here. This is Denver Mental Health dropping off mental patients here at Occupy Denver. Is this the right place for somebody who's leaving a mental hospital? Is this where you want to send them? Like, this is where, right here in front of the Capitol.
Hey, revolution.
Right. Okay, we can stop that. I think everybody gets the idea of what's going on, and we don't have the video for that. So, that's what's going on. And meanwhile, the Republicans are saying, you know, we need to get working people paying more taxes. Now, the fact of the matter is, every person who has a job where the job pays them with a paycheck, you know, an hourly wage or a salary or something like that, every person is working, as opposed to, you know, like Mitt Romney, who gets their money from dividends and interest. Every one of those people is paying payroll tax, about 8% of their income, you know, right off the top, even if they're only making, you know, a couple thousand bucks a year, bang, payroll tax. So they all have skin in the game. Everybody has skin in the game. But the Republicans want them to have more. First of all, they're promoting this lie that working people don't pay taxes. 100% of working people pay taxes, as I described. They all pay the payroll tax. Now, some people are below the poverty line, so they don't pay the income, the federal income tax, but they are paying taxes. They're paying the payroll tax. They're paying sales tax. They're paying, you know, if they're wherever they live, they're ultimately paying property taxes. Even if they're renting, there's a pass-through. We are all paying taxes. And we know it. But Congressman Pat Tiberi, the Republican from Ohio, he would like you to think that you can't lower taxes on people who don't pay taxes, right?
So I think we got to lower the tax rates, both for corporations and for American individuals, and let them try to grow our economy and grow jobs so people like me and you can have an opportunity to work.
But you're only talking about lowering tax rates on individuals in the upper income areas. Not, you're talking about raising tax rates.
Well, it's hard to lower taxes on people who don't pay taxes.
Right. So somebody gets up and says, wait a minute, you're talking about, and the both the Ryan proposal, you know, the Ryan Boehner McConnell proposal and the Romney proposal would raise taxes on Walmart greeters and cut taxes on people like Mitt Romney and other millionaires and billionaires. So he says, well, you know, so the person says, well, wait a minute, you want to raise taxes? Well, you can't cut taxes. It's like, you know, the world, it's bizarre world. Here's Here's another clip of him. We've got to get these people paying taxes so they've got skin in the game.
If you don't have skin in the game, even if it's 10 bucks a quarter, I think it changes the debate on what the role of the federal government is and what the role of state government is.
Right. So let's make sure that everyone is paying more taxes, except those people who are paying more than 25% income tax right now, 25, 26, 27, 28, 20, basically people who are making over $150,000, $200,000 a year. Let's cut their taxes. Let's cut Bill Gates' taxes, who, by the way, God bless him, has said, you know, he's willing to pay more taxes. But Romney wants to give him a tax cut. And all the rest of the Romney rich. I've invented a new phrase, by the way, for super rich, Romney rich. Because he is, he's super rich.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And so, you know, the Republican sales pitch is raise taxes on working people, cut taxes on billionaires, and somehow that's going to be magic.
I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine, I walk the line.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Mark in Plymouth, Michigan. I used to live in Plymouth, Michigan. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi there, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. I used to work at Plymouth Electronics. I don't know if they're still there or not, but it was a little radio TV repair shop, and I was a TV technician when I was 18, I think, or 19, thereabouts. Maybe 20? Yeah. Right outside Ann Arbor.
I don't think they're there anymore.
Say what?
I don't think they're there anymore.
Yeah, they're probably not. People don't repair TVs anymore. They replace them. So what's up?
That's right. Well, Tom, I wanted to let you know about this. I know how this actually touched your family in a most tragic manner. Our governor this month signed into law a bill quietly passed by our legislature, House Bill 4601. I found out about it from Media Matters because none of the media in Michigan is none of the papers have carried even a tiny story, anything about this bill. But what the bill does is limit the compensation or limit the liability of corporations for asbestos exposure victims.
My. So
and
this
what
is
basically
the
says is that parent companies or successor corporations that purchase these companies that have these liabilities aren't going to be liable for
right.
those things.
This is the Hal Halliburton out bill.
Limiting the liability. So they're buying the assets and dumping the liability, basically.
Yeah. That's tragic. And I'll tell you, before that came about, you know, my dad, as you know, died of mesothelioma and because of asbestos exposure and extensive asbestos exposure and from a company that knew that it was dangerous at the time. And he did hire a lawyer. Actually, I went out and found a lawyer for him and you know, we sued a couple of companies, and they had 36 or 38 lawyers showed up in my dad's living room, which is just a, you know, this is a small house. And they were literally spilling out into the streets to depose him all day long, just basically harass him. He had this one person with him, and he was in tears by the end of the day. What he got out of that was, you know, after everything was paid for and everything was just a little over $100,000 for his life.
Yeah.
For his life. And that was the money that he wanted to leave behind for my mom. Because, you know, my mom at that point was still, you know, I mean, she was in her early 70s. I mean, still had years ahead of her. And you know, now they're saying, nah, your life's not worth anything. That's right. Absolutely tragic. Mark, thank
well, you know,
for sharing
and
it.
And the tragedy is, again, going back to this liberal media that doesn't cover anything. It
yeah.
does not cover these things. Our Republicans in Lansing, under pressure of these corporations that own these liabilities, passed this law to, and there's nothing in the paper. There's nothing in the media. You know, and our governor signs it into law, and there's nothing. I have to find out from Media Matters that this occurred last week.
That's amazing. And bad on me, Mark, for not having tracked that down. I got to pay more careful attention to Media Matters. Mark, thank you very much for the call. I will be off in search of that story. Greg in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just do not understand the Republicans on one and two things. One, okay, HUD, food stamps, you know, taking care of the poor, but then we can lose $2.3 trillion that just fell off the books from the Pentagon, and all nothing said.
You're
about
right.
It.
Yeah, $2.3 trillion is totally missing from the Pentagon budget. A budget that is larger than that of all militaries on Earth combined. And I don't hear Paul Ryan screaming about that.
Yeah, and we don't want to feed the hungry. Let's cut them. You know, come on. Yeah. Let's kill off the poor, you know, because we don't want to be bothered with that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, it really is hypocritical and tragic. Greg, thank you for the call. Liz in Los Angeles. Hey, Liz, what's up?
Hi, Tom, long-time listener. I used to listen to you on K-Talk, and now I'm watching you on Free Speech TV.
Uh-huh.
I was brought up a Christian. I've lived my life that way as much as I can, you know, not perfect. But I don't know how anybody who is a Christian can really be back the Republicans. I mean, everything they do is so anti-person and so anti the religion. There's no compassion. There's no kindness. It's all me, you know, pathological, sociopathic kind of behavior. But that's just my statement, okay?
Sure.
But I have a question for you.
Okay.
It's about Grover Norquist.
Mm-hmm.
If all these Republicans sign this promise not to raise taxes, they have to give an oath of office when they're sworn in. Isn't this an inherent conflict of their oath of office? Aren't they supposed to be serving the people before they're serving Grover Norquist?
I believe it is. And by the way, whenever we use the words Grover Norquist, we should preface them with multimillionaire K Street lobbyist, because that's what he is.
Right.
He's a multimillionaire, and he's a K Street lobbyist. And so why have all... I guess now five or six have kind of recused themselves from it, but virtually all, let's say, of the Republicans in the House of Representatives and the United States Senate signed a blood oath, basically, to be loyal, blindly loyal. And he, by the way, gets to determine what's a tax increase and what isn't, to be blindly loyal to a multimillionaire K Street lobbyist by the name of Grover Norquist. I think it's a violation of the oath of their oath of office. I think it's a contradiction of their oath of office. And I think it's malfeasance while in office. Liz, thank you very much for the call. I got to move and try and get one more call in here before the break. Adrian in Watsonville, California. Hey, Adrian, what's up?
Oh, hi. I'm calling because I've been listening to all this about food stamps and the poor and funding of Planned Parenthood. And I wish that every time the Republicans brought that up, that whoever they're speaking to would come right back at them with all the money that is spent on corporate welfare where it's not needed. And it's so much more money than even now goes to the poor food stamps and, you know, help for them when they need it.
Right. And I think it's important also to point out, Adrian, that most of the people who are getting food stamps are the working poor. They're actually people who are working, who are doing their very best in a crummy economy, thanks to 30 years of Reaganomics, where all the jobs have been gone. But your point is very, very well made and very well taken. Thank you very much for the call. 27 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. 2 million children have seen their families thrown out of their houses in the last 3 years. It's amazing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back with more on your calls right after this, 27 minutes past the hour. By the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, the Tom Hartman program. Welcome back. Eric Cantor has a new tax deal. He's going to give more tax cuts to companies, particularly big companies. And for every $1.1 million he gives these companies, he hopes they will create one job. What do you think? I'd say just give me the $1 million. You know, I'll find something to do. But Eric Cantor... That's incredible. Meanwhile, the president, President Obama, this is clip 22, Jacob, had a made a comment that all over right-wing talk radio, they are all hysterical about. I forget which one of Shakespeare's plays it was in, but, you know, methinks thou doth protest too much, right? This statement that somebody starts screaming about something that you didn't even quite say, you know that you've hit a nerve. And they are all over President Obama for having said that Mitt Romney was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Well, he didn't say that Mitt Romney was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He was speaking at a junior college, or at a community college, and he was talking about how these, you know, the programs that this college teaches, one of these two-year colleges, the programs that they teach are immediate job skill programs, put people right into the workplace, and we need to be funding these programs. We need to be helping people get through college. The president went through college on scholarships. He was not a rich guy. And people should be able to get it, these programs. Well, here he is. He can say it better than me.
We created a foundation for those of us to prosper. Somebody gave me an education. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Michelle wasn't. But somebody gave us a chance. Just like these folks up here are looking for a chance. When you take classes at a community college like this one and you learn the skills that you need to get a job right away, that does not just benefit you. It benefits the company that ends up hiring and profiting from your skills. It makes the entire region stronger economically.
I'll tell you, the world's best associate producer, Jacob Dean, did exactly that. He went through a community college and learned how to be a board op and how to work in radio. And here he is, he and Sean Taylor and Louise putting together, you know, one of the biggest talk radio shows in America. It's just, yeah, not to brag on me, but to brag on him. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Fine. What's on your mind?
It aggravates me for somebody to think $2 trillion can go missing. It doesn't go missing. They know exactly where it is. They used it on covert operations, such as maybe a space.
No, this is not the black budget. This is not the, you know, they identify how much money that is. They just won't tell you where they're spending it.
They can't tell you about certain things.
No, but this is
the money on.
But the 2.3 trillion is they can't account for it. This is over a period of several decades. It's not last year's money.
Because they can't tell you what they spend it on.
The money that they can't tell you what they're spending it on, they tell you, hey, it's, you know, we've got $47 billion that we need for security operations. We're not going to tell you where the money's going, but Congress does have to appropriate that money. There has to be an accounting for it, and that accounting is done with committees in Congress who all have security clearances behind closed doors and not on the public record. This is money that has actually gone missing, Corky. Actually gone missing. Glenn in Olivet, Michigan. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Love your show.
Thanks.
One thing that concerns me is, okay, so all these jobs, you know, they're fighting against the unions and everything else, want to drop the wages. Okay, by dropping wages, that's going to drop the amount of taxes being paid in by the working class people.
That's right.
If we do that, and if the corporations that want to pay less in wages don't want to pay more taxes, where's this money going to come from?
So far the strategy, ever since Reagan first dropped the top tax rate from 74% down to 28%, the strategy has been to borrow it. And, you know, the Republicans have borrowed nearly $10 trillion, and maybe a little more than that. And, you know, George Bush borrowed just $5 trillion all by himself. And they put us on a course. They set up the budget and they set up this economic infrastructure that, you know, is running us right toward a wall. And it's not because we're a poor nation. We're an incredibly rich nation. We've got a lot of incredibly rich people and very wealthy corporations and a lot of natural resources and a lot of wealth. But it is concentrated in a very small number of hands. And like Mitt Romney, they are paying virtually nothing in taxes. So, you know, frankly, if corporations, when Dwight Eisenhower was president, corporations paid about 35% of the total cost of operating government. And, you know, individuals paid the other 65%. Right now, corporations are paying about 11%. I think it's 11 or 12% in somewhere in that neighborhood. It has just fallen off the scale. You know, so you're absolutely right. Most of the federal tax revenues comes from working people. And if those working people are getting screwed, and they have been getting that, you know, for a long, long time, then there's less tax revenue. And this is why, you know, when Bill Clinton raised the tax rates and you had the dot-com bubble, it didn't hurt. A lot of people, working people, were making money, and they were paying more taxes. So you nailed it, Glenn. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And Vicky in San Francisco. Hey, Vicky, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
I'm a long time listener to you.
Thank you.
But second time I'm calling, and I got through. However, after we finish, I know we have 1 minute. I wish you had a little bit more time because it's extremely important what I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
Well, it has to do with wrongful foreclosures from banks as gangsters. I'm dealing with a mortgage company right now. I'm in foreclosure. I was forced to file bankruptcy to protect my home, not to mention what they've done thereafter. With fraudulent documents and notice of sale never was filed timely. Mm-hmm. They changed the terms of my loan before maturity to begin with. It was two years fixed rate. And then thereafter, after the second year, will be adjustable.
Right.
Some other third people outside.
So, Vicky, the details of your crisis are your details. A lot of people have very do you have a question, or are you just identifying, are you saying, yeah, I'm one of those people, too?
Okay, I'm one of those people, too, and I have proof time, and I need your help, and I need to leave my phone number. Any other people suffering, or you, your station, your program.
Okay, we can't put your phone number on the air, Vicky, I'm sorry. And I would, you know, if you want to talk with people, I would encourage you to go over to tomhartman.com. There's a message board there. You can post messages. There's no cost for it or anything like that. But frankly, if you're in foreclosure, and you've obviously already done this, get a lawyer and fight that thing. Rob in Farmington, Missouri. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, we know that the sea life in the Gulf is being mutated and deformed.
Yes.
But what about the rest of the wildlife, and what about the humans that live on the Gulf? Is anybody checking that?
We have known for years, for decades, that there is this thing called Cancer Alley, which is just a little north of the Gulf, and it's the east side, the downwind side of the big oil refineries in Texas and Louisiana. And it's where the pollution from refining oil, you know, hits the air and then hits these communities. And so now you've got that same kind of pollution coming in off the Gulf, you know, being picked up out of the air and also coming in the water and now coming in the food supply. I would be astounded if it didn't have a deep and profound, you know, if a generation from now we're not looking back at mutations and cancers and, for that matter, a few decades, maybe not even a decade from now. Cancers on average take, you know, 10, 15, 20 years to form, but there are some that are very quick. So, yeah, Bob, we're concerned about the seafood, but we also, you're absolutely right, we need to be concerned about the people. Thank you very much for the call. Lonnie in Chicago. Hey, Lonnie, what's up?
Yeah, love your show. Appreciate what you're doing. You're doing an outstanding job. Just very briefly, I am a Roman Catholic. I've been Catholic all of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And just to comment that it's laughable that people like Representative Ryan Boehner and former candidate Rick Santorum call themselves Roman Catholics. They don't follow church doctrine. They are in disobedience to the church's encyclicals on social justice, workers' rights, racial equality. These men are just, it's abominable what they're doing and how they are trying to represent themselves as being in line with the Catholic Church, because they're not.
The Catholic Church has, for the record, supported the right of workers to unionize. It has, for the record, supported the concept that health care should be a right, not a privilege. These are the things that the Republicans stand against. It is, for the record, supported the idea that everybody should have a pension when they retire, that there should be, you know, good solid Social Security. It has, for the record, been opposed. I mean, the Pope himself came out and spoke out against the bombing of Afghanistan and Iraq, or the invasion of Iraq.
Exactly.
Anyway. The Catholic Church for years and years, and I'm saying this as an outsider. I'm not a Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic. But the Catholic Church for years and years, and you know, I remember prominently the Berrigan brothers, but there's others, you know, going back throughout the 20th century in large part, and certainly before that as well, has been at the forefront in many cases of social justice issues. And
absolutely,
you know, it's just astounding to see these guys who call themselves Catholics and call themselves Republicans representing the rationale for cutting food stamps to people as being the teachings of Jesus
by the Catholic Church. They need to read their Bibles. They need to look at Matthew 25. They need to look at Acts 5.
Yeah.
It's a joke. It's lame.
Yeah. Yeah. Matthew 7, Matthew 25. Yeah, absolutely. Lonnie, thanks a lot for the call. And very eloquent statement. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We will be back. What are the Republicans going to do about all these people about to be kicked out of their homes?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll get into that, your calls, and we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Ellen Ratner with us with the Talk Radio News Service, TalkRadioNews.com, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Well, it's interesting that the Senate Democrats are looking to really go after the Republicans in the small business tax cut bill. This is, you know, there are, of course, differences in the Republican Party. Likes to come off as monolithic, but basically there's a big divide between the House and the Senate. There was a 253-173 vote on Thursday. The House Republicans passed their measure that would give small businesses a 20% tax cut.
Right. This is the one that Eric Cantor is saying that one job will be created for every $1.1 million in tax cuts that they give to these so-called small businesses, most of them actually very large corporations.
Exactly, because a small business can be 500 employees.
Right.
That's not a small. That's not the way you and I do small business, Tom.
Yeah, there you go.
The Senate says that the House Republican, the Senate Democrats are saying, of course, that the House Republican bill only benefits the million-dollar businessmen. Chuck Schumer, Dick Durbin, Patty Murray, they were all with Senator Reid today. But it looks like it's going to be very, very difficult for the Republicans to get their bill through. So I would say that's kind of a dead on arrival. Also, very interesting, actor Danny Glover, friend of my brother's, plans to do an Occupy Justice Department next week. He wants to talk about the, and I can never pronounce his name, even though he's a Goddard master's degree graduate, Mamouma Jamal. As you know, he was imprisoned, now life in prison, for supposedly killing a police officer. They're going to ask Eric Holder to release him, to end mass incarceration and criminalization of black and Latino youth. That's going to be next week at the Justice Department. So that's interesting. Also,
that's great.
This is not so good. Not so good news on several fronts today. U.S. Army announced this week that there were 3 confirmed suicides, maybe as many as 15, among active duty service members. As you know, something like 4 times the number of people who have come back from Afghanistan and Iraq, soldiers have killed themselves in terms of compared to the number of people who were actually killed over there. But now we're talking about active duty people, not vets. That puts things in a very different scenario.
Wow. So the active duty military, in other words, has been stressed to the point where it's melting down as well.
Yes, and you know, when the LA Times published those photos yesterday, what they didn't realize and what they didn't really, what people didn't really say is this group was going to be sent back. This is the same group of soldiers that was going to be sent back for a second tour of duty.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Stretched to the max. Now, speaking of being stretched to the max, mm-hmm. South Sudan is now at war officially, according to the North. Bashir declared war on South Sudan. Of course, there is this question of whether South Sudan tried to overtake an oil field that the North did claim and was sort of internationally recognized by the North. But in any case, this area does not need another war where 2.5 million people were killed in the last war. And you can well imagine if there's a war, there's going to be about another million killed.
Is there any possibility that Salva Kiir, the president of South Sudan, and Bashir, the war criminal president of North Sudan or of Sudan, can come to any kind of reconciliation on this? Or what I read was that Bashir just said, "This is it. This is all out war. We're going to totally destroy the South or take it over." Is there any agency that can block this? Is the UN spoken out about this? Is the OAS?
Guess is if the United States and NATO and whatever wanted to do an operation to bomb along the borders and stop it, they probably could.
I don't think there's the stomach for it in this country.
Yeah.
There's probably not the stomach for it in Europe, and that's the story.
Boy. It seems like, you know, if ever there was a time to violate the time-honored tradition of not arresting leaders, you know, I mean, even during World War II, we didn't try to specifically kill Hitler anywhere near as much as I think we should have.
Right.
Now is the time, I'm not saying to kill, but to
Bashir has got to go.
To arrest Bashir. I mean, this
right.
guy is a war criminal. He's been tagged as such by the International Criminal Court in The Hague, and he's a wanted man.
That's right.
Anyway, okay.
Okay, couple quick ones here. There were some more bombings. Speaking of bombings, in Iraq, 37 people, 20 bombs went off across Iraq today. That is not a nice situation. Jobless claims, good news. That is down. Existing home sales, that's not such good news. That was also down in March. Leon Panetta, speaking of war, says the military is ready to act on Syria if required. Now, I don't know what exactly that means, and he did not explain it.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you wouldn't expect him to, really. But the fact,
no.
You know...
Right.
We'll see how this one plays out.
Also, our Vice President Biden is going to go to the Everglades next week. He is going to be talking about how it's important to restore the Everglades.
Now, you do a lot of you drop in on a lot of right wing talk shows throughout the course of the day.
I do.
My understanding is that they're all going nuts about the fact that the president, either earlier today or yesterday, speaking at a community college, said made the point that. You know, he was given a hand up by a scholarship, and so was his wife, Michelle. He said, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Somebody gave me some help. And the Republicans are hysterical, saying that he is accusing Romney of being born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
He did not mention Romney's name, but you're right. They're all the talking points have gone out.
Well, that's interesting. Methinks thou doth protest too much? I mean, is this are they going to try and turn every reference to helping people in America into a... this guy's a class warrior or a Marxist?
They will do anything to win this election.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but they will.
Yeah.
Not even a question.
Okay. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Up next, Greg Palast, the shocking truth behind the recent BP settlements. You're not going to want to miss this. Stick around.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And I am pleased to invite on the show Greg Palast, one of America's greatest... Actually, one of our few these days, tragically, but in addition to one of our few, one of our greatest investigative reporters, the author of numerous books, brilliant books, from Armed Madhouse to most recently Vulture's Picnic. His website is Greg Palast, PALAST.com. And, Greg, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
I understand BP is waving a flag in the air, a victory of sorts, doing a couple laps.
Yeah, unfortunately, laps around the graves of 11 guys who were burnt up in the Gulf 2 years ago. I mean, they did pretty well. They cut their nice deal so that they will be limited in their liability to less than the $20 billion that they had set aside for the harm and damage and death that they had caused in the Gulf. So they cut a deal. The lawyers did what they could, given the Supreme Court, which is, you know, basically justice has gone wild.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that they had little choice but to accept that settlement.
Right.
However, what I was hoping is that the Obama administration will take these guys to trial, and then a story that until today hasn't come out will come out.
And that story, is this the story that took you to one of the stands, isn't it?
A stand, that's right. Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan.
If Americans don't know where Azerbaijan is, Baku is its capital.
Mm.
It's been selling oil for 1,000 years. You will, because it's an oil state. As soon as the 101st Airborne arrives there, we'll all find out where Baku is.
Right.
But, yes, I was working with British Television. I got a tip right after the Deepwater Horizon exploded that, in fact, that had not been the first blowout of a big BP offshore rig, that there had been another blowout 2 years earlier in the Caspian Sea off the coast of Azerbaijan, and BP had covered it up. And by the way, horribly, when I got there to get witnesses to tell me the story, I was arrested, two witnesses disappeared. Thank God I still have contact with a third. And the sad story, the cover-up, was verified later in WikiLeaks. The U.S. State Department, under Condoleezza Rice, knew about the BP blowout, and the Bush State Department covered it up with BP.
Wow.
Horrific story.
Wow. And so what this means is that when they were using this quickset cement to seal the deepwater horizon or the Mercando or whatever that well was down in the Gulf of Mexico, the cement that failed that caused the explosion that killed those 11 men and that led to that giant, massive oil leak that this is, tomorrow is the second anniversary of, that when they used that nitrogen-filled concrete, they already knew that it would blow out or could blow out because it had blown out in Azerbaijan. I always pronounced it differently. I don't know. In any case, and
even they don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah. And why, you know, if they knew that there was this kind of risk, why would they incur the liability of using crummy cement?
Money. It's okay. Understand when you put nitrogen in cement, it's a Halliburton formula came up with this.
Right.
And BP does say, by the way, the use of that quick dry cement did kill those men. And they blame Halliburton for not telling them it could blow out.
Hmm.
And yet they knew about it because they actually literally had a blowout 2 years earlier.
Right.
And while I'm not a big fan of Halliburton, because they concealed that their computer models knew it could blow out, BP never told them that, yeah, it did. And so BP's blaming Halliburton. Halliburton's blaming BP. Both of them covered up important information. In what's happened is nitrogen-laced cement. What it does is it turns cement into like a milkshake, and it dries faster because it has all these bubbles in it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that in deep water, with all those bubbles in the cement, you can create channels, and the gas can go right through it and blow out.
So it becomes porous, basically.
Yeah. It just bubbled out. And so what happened is it happened in the Deepwater Horizon, and we saw the horrific effects, but it also happened 2 years earlier in this police state of Azerbaijan. I just spoke to one of the witnesses again yesterday, and, you know, and I said, I asked him the obvious question, why aren't people coming forward? He said, it's a police state, you disappear.
Right.
You know, I was arrested, two of my three witnesses did disappear. There, and by the way, BP, part of my story is that BP, paid massive bribes to this government to make sure that they stay silent.
Wow.
And when I say that, that's not secondhand or anything else. The BP executive, his name is Leslie Abrams, went on my show in Britain and told me on air, yes, I paid millions of dollars in bribes to the government officials, and I did it. Part of the bribes were personally handed over by the chairman of BP himself, who wanted to participate in handing over the big checks.
Isn't that a crime that causes the U.S. government to say, you can't do business in our country anymore?
They were, as a British company, they don't have the same anti-bribery laws as we do. Now, here's the question.
Oh, really?
Could BP have been considered an American company because its number one shareholder is J.P. Morgan? If so, then BP has violated the
Federal Corrupt Practices Act. Isn't
exactly
that what it's called?
The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which prohibits bribery of foreign officials. But
right.
Even more, they lied. BP lied to the Securities Exchange Commission. It is required by law to say if there's a big event that could affect its finances, and they did. They mentioned that there was
a gas leak near or around the Azeri platform in the Caspian Sea.
Hmm.
They did not admit that there was a blowout. They simply didn't admit it. The only place that they admitted it was to the U.S. State Department.
And then Condi Rice covered that up.
Condi Rice.
Here's the other thing, yeah, I find amazing is that I didn't realize until reading your book, Vulture's Picnic, that BP actually was responsible for cleaning up the Exxon Valdez spill and, you know, shall we say, charitably cut corners the same way that they're doing now in the Gulf?
Yeah, we found, I led the investigation, I was an investigator before journalism, of the fraud charges against Exxon and its partners. But it was BP, not Exxon, that was in charge of containing the oil spill in Alaska after the Exxon Valdez hit the reef. They lied about the equipment there. They said that there was equipment out there. There wasn't. They made it up. They falsified documents. The same game happened in the Gulf. And in this case, really, really serious, that they knew that this quick dry cement, which saves them a lot of money, it's $500,000 a day to rent one of those oil rigs.
Hmm.
They knew that it could fail. Halliburton knew it could fail from its computer models, and they all kept silent because Halliburton made money selling the service. BP made money by saving on time,
sure,
and, you know, paying off a few Azeri officials with cash.
Greg, are they still using, yeah, this kind of cement? I mean, they're back to deep water drilling now off our Gulf Coast right now.
You know, BP will not promise not to use it. They're more cautious, they say. So is Halliburton, but other companies are not using it. And you know, first world nations, not like Louisiana, which is the third world, but places like Brazil don't permit that type of stuff. They, you know, right, you put cement in a well, you don't make it into a
Brazil.
Milkshake.
Brazil recently arrested some oil executives, including an American. Did they not?
That's right. Chevron had a blowout. They take it very seriously.
Are they still holding that American oil executive down there?
Yes, they are charging. They aren't holding them. They've charged them with crimes.
But they pulled their passports.
Yeah, they can't go anywhere. They are charged with crimes, and, you know, I'm waiting, you know, Bobby Kennedy worked with me on this. By the way, you can see the full story at ecowatch.org.
Right,
Kennedy's law professor said, hey, this is a crime covering this up. We have,
yeah,
laws against this.
Amazing. You can read ecowatch.org, gregpalace.com. Get a copy of Vulture's Picnic. You want to know what's really going on. Greg Palace, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's amazing. It's amazing what Greg has been able to uncover and dig out, and the malfeasance and the crimes, and you just name it. It's there.
For the cost of the cleanup, who foot the bill? I got a pretty bad feeling the taxpayers will. The oil company says, drill, baby, drill still.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and I got to put on my glasses for you. Aussie. Let me hang on just a second here. Aussie in British Columbia, Canada. Hey, Aussie, what's up?
Well, I wanted to make an observation in regard to the Citizens United case that was, mm-hmm, decided by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it down here. I said the United States Constitution expressly forbids the election of a president born on foreign soil. In light of that stricture, it is difficult to understand why the Supreme Court decided the way it did in Citizens United. That decision directly or indirectly permits super PACs from foreign lands, thereby giving rise to images of a puppet and puppet, yeah, masters.
Well, here's something to consider, Aussie. Back,
yeah,
in the 1980s, the Reagan administration, the charge that was made by Barbara Honegger, who worked in the State Department at the time and wrote a book about this called October Surprise, and on the back of it is a picture of her with George Bush on one side and Ronald Reagan on the other, you know, in a nice little group photo. She worked for both of them. She claims that Bill Casey, who was the campaign manager for the Reagan campaign in 1980, and who Reagan put in charge of the CIA when he won, that Bill Casey in July, August, September, whatever it was, went over actually met in Paris with representatives from the Iranians, the students who were holding the hostages, and cut them a deal where he said, you know, they had this military that the Shah had acquired under the United States, you know, from us, and it was all U.S.-made weaponry, but there was this embargo where Jimmy Carter wouldn't sell them any spare parts. and, or for that matter, wouldn't sell them new missiles to go in their missile launchers. And so Reagan said, or Bill Casey said, we will sell you these things under the table secretly, and in fact, we'll give you some of them if you'll just hold those hostages until after the election so Jimmy Carter loses. And they did. In fact, they released the hostages the very moment that Reagan, you know, raised his hand and said, okay, you know, I'm president. And that was in January 5th, I think it was, of 1981. And that was literally the minute that they let the hostages go, is their way of saying, okay, we got a deal, you got a deal, we're gonna, you know, put it out here. And then Reagan proceeded over the next 2 years to sell and give weapons to the Iranians. So the hypothesis, the working hypothesis right now, is that the Iranians are in trouble. Again, they have another embargo, just like they did under Jimmy Carter. They would like money, they would like weapons, they would like all kinds of cool stuff, and they are particularly fond of the fact that George W. Bush, last Republican president, see, they got all these weapons from the Republican Reagan, and then George W. Bush took out their biggest enemy in the world. Iran's biggest enemy in the world was Saddam Hussein, who was a Sunni Muslim. They're Shia Muslims. They fought a 10-year or 12-year-long war with him. Over a million people on both sides died in that war. It cost them billions and billions of dollars, and George Bush just took him out. It was the biggest favor that could have been done to Iran. The Bank of Iran was the first large business to officially open in downtown Baghdad, Iraq. And so George W. Bush helped out. That Republican helped out the Iranians. Ronald Reagan, that Republican, helped out the Iranians. And now, because of Citizens United, if Mahmoud Ahmadinejad wants to make sure that another Republican gets into office so that he can help out the Iranians, he can do it. So what do you think? What do you think of my conspiracy theory here?
Very illuminating.
Yes. I think it's actually possible that the Iranians are behind the Romney campaign or are supportive of the Romney campaign. The first time I said this on the air, I thought of it as a joke. And then I started thinking, but wait a minute. George W. Bush did exactly what the Iranians wanted, took out his big competitor. Ronald Reagan did exactly what the Iranians wanted, gave them all these weapons. All this time they were theoretically an enemy of the United States. When Bill Clinton was president and there was an embargo on Iran, the year before the election, in the year 2000, or might have been 99, right around there, the year before the election of 2000, the president of Halliburton authorized a deal to sell drilling equipment and other equipment that could have been used for a nuclear program to Iran. That guy was a guy by the name of Dick Cheney.
Yes.
He was a multimillionaire CEO. So I'm looking at this going, you know, maybe I wasn't, you know, I mean, I made it as a joke, but maybe it's more than just a joke. Anyhow, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And for giving me the opportunity to just go off on my rant there. Tony in Cleveland. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Not much. You had the lady on earlier was talking about stuff she received in the mail in Texas.
Yeah.
I'm up in Ohio, and I got this thing the other day, and I've been steaming about it ever since. It's titled a Catholic Opinion Research Survey, and it's got a letter as to why you need to participate. There's 5 million Catholics being, you know, like it's a survey.
Right.
However, let me just give you one of the questions, or I could give you several of them. One question, what do you think America's founding fathers, the authors of America's Constitution, men such as George Washington, would think of the efforts by the ACLU and the radical left to eliminate all reference to God from American public life? That's one question. Another question.
There is such an effort? I didn't know.
These are my answers to the questions. What are you talking about?
Right.
But it's all propaganda because it's going to people's homes.
Sure.
Another question is like this. How likely do you think it is that President Obama's Justice Department, now packed with former ACLU lawyers, will use this new so-called hate crimes law to harass, intimidate, and even prosecute those who speak out against the militant homosexual agenda?
Oh, my.
I mean, this stuff is...
There's
this
a
stuff.
Militant homosexual agenda?
Yeah, right, yes. It's homophobic, it's... full of Islamophobia, and I mean, it's unbelievable. And they send it out under the guise of a questionnaire.
Right. Are you Catholic?
Oh, yeah. I'm Catholic. I go to church every
Sunday.
So
they bought a mailing list of people that they knew were Catholic.
Right, right.
That's very interesting. Stuff is getting really targeted. Mary is a senior citizen. You know, there were a lot of the questions that were targeting senior citizens and hers.
Right.
Fascinating. Tony, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, it's unbelievable stuff that they're doing.
Oh, yeah. This stuff flies under the radar because it's not done electronically in email, so it's not easy to post on the web. You get it in the postal mail. This is sneaky stuff. Thank you, Tony.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, who's going to call and tell me that I'm crazy, that there's no possibility Ahmadinejad could be funding Romney? You think? The good, the bad, and the very, very angustrostraciously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good! Citigroup shareholders. At their annual meeting Tuesday, shareholders of Citigroup voted against the pay packages that had been previously given to that company's executives, including $25 million given to Citigroup CEO Vakhran Pandit. While the vote is non-binding and can't influence the company's actual pay practices, it sent a powerful message of discontent to both Citigroup's leadership and to Wall Street firms in general. One analyst called the move historic, saying that no other Wall Street firm had come under such fire from its shareholders. Let's hope this is just the beginning of a trend and that shareholders continue to pressure corporate executives to clean up their acts. The bad. Senator John McCain. Earlier today, McCain, a strong supporter of Mitt Romney, weighed in on the Doggate scandal. He tweeted a picture of his son's dog saying, "Good picture of my son Jimmy's bulldog, Apollo. I'm sorry, Mr. President, he's not on the menu." Of course, this line was referencing a section in the president's book, Dreams from My Father, where he talks about eating dog in Indonesia as a child. Conservatives have latched onto this statement, using it in response to attacks on Mitt Romney for strapping his dog to the roof of his car on a family trip. Maybe Senator McCain should be focusing on real issues, like fixing our economy, instead of fueling the conservative spin machine. Or maybe he should be focusing on the fact that President Obama was a little kid at that time. Mitt Romney was 36 years old when he strapped a dog to the roof of his car. And the very, very ugly Representative Pat Tiberi. At a tax policy summit yesterday, Tiberi defended, maybe it's Tiberi, I'm not sure, defended the Paul Ryan Republican budget, and also defended the idea that taxes on the rich need to be cut while taxes on low-income Americans should be raised. Referring to low-income Americans, working people, low-income working people, he said, "It's hard to lower taxes on people who don't pay taxes. If you don't have skin in the game, even if it's 10 bucks a quarter, I think it changes the debate on what the role of the federal government is and what the role of the state government is." Don't have skin in the game? Low-income Americans are the ones getting screwed by the Republican budget. To suggest that they shouldn't have a say is very, very ugly. Amazing. Amazing. So, Patty in Townsend, Maryland. Hey, Patty, welcome.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, I'm fine. What's up?
I just wanted to say that your comment about Ahmadinejad and Citizens United, I think that's crazy talk. I mean, what person in their right mind would accept donations from even a super PAC to which Ahmadinejad has contributed a lot of money?
How do you know?
Well,
Karl Rove Super PAC. Karl Rove Super PAC got a $10 million donation from one entity, right? A $10 million donation from one entity back in 2010 to help flip those elections, and they got another $10 million donation. That was 2 years ago. They got another $10 million donation last year. We know this because their tax returns were just filed last week.
Right.
However, we have no idea who it was who wrote that $10 million check. It could have been Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Well, you know, the reason I ask that is because I know that I have to report if I give $100 or more to a candidate.
That's so. If you want to take a tax deduction. But if you're Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, you don't need to take a tax deduction, so you don't report to the IRS that you gave the money to Karl Rove. I'm not even sure that giving money to Karl Rove is tax deductible. This is where billionaires play and where countries play. This is not where people like you and I play.
No, I get that, but I don't think it's not tax deductible to contribute to a campaign. But they always ask your occupation and, you know, they ask all that information.
Well, that's because there are federal election laws.
So super PACs don't have to report their donation.
That's correct. They have to report the size of their largest gifts, and there's a certain slice of that they have to say, we had, you know, this percentage of people giving this amount or something, some words to that effect. Stephen Colbert laid this out pretty brilliantly, actually, over the last year on the Colbert Report. But the donors can be anonymous till the day they die. And the Super PAC never has to say who gave them the money, and they don't even have to say where they spent the money. So, you know, there's been this revolving door of, for example, in Ohio, there's been one, and Sherrod Brown was on this program yesterday talking about it, one right-wing group after another, and they take turns. They don't waste their money. If one of them is on the air, the other ones aren't, attacking Senator Sherrod Brown, who's, you know, a progressive, and trying to take him down, you know, 6 months before the election, or however many months it is. It's maybe more than that.
Yeah, I don't doubt that there are plenty of people out there who would want to donate, and that Ahmadinejad, I mean, I don't doubt your theory. It actually sounds pretty good. I just wonder, though, if it wouldn't be possible. How could you, you know, with everything you can find out today, how can you not find out who's donating to the Super PAC? You know,
because the billionaires are really, really good at keeping things secret. Patty, got to move along, but that's really true. I mean, if you try to find out who gave that $10 million to Karl Rove to flip elections in the 2010 election, you won't be able to. Or who gave him the $10 million last year? I think it was the same person, and I think there's a pretty good chance it was Ahmadinejad. Julie in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Julie, welcome to the program. Julie? No, Julie. Okay. Let's see here. Ted in Hayland, Indiana. Hey, Ted, what's up?
I was calling you because I listen to you every day, Tom.
Thank you.
And I'm a AT&T stockholder, and I'm an ex-employee, and I despise the way that they are funding ALEC, and I would like to let them know that I don't like it, and I defy somebody to get through the corporate office or the shareholders line to talk to them, to tell them just how bad that is. There's a bunch of people like me, old people and black people and Hispanics, that they're trying to stop them from voting. That is absolutely wrong, and I'd like to see something done about it. And they won't.
So what happens when you call AT&T? Do you get a computer that says press 1 for that kind of stuff? Is that?
Oh, I went all the way from press 1 all the way back to the business office asking me if I want to pay my bill.
Right.
I pay my bill every month. Yeah. I buy all their stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm an ex-employee, and boy, I feel like this is terrible.
You might want to look into
treating people
as a shareholder. You might want to look into what's involved in making a shareholder resolution for the next corporate board meeting.
I've
never done it, so I don't know how to do it either. I do know that shareholders can do it, and I know that this has been something that, for example, there was a group of Catholic nuns who were quite famous for this in the 70s and 80s, and maybe still are doing it, and they just don't get the press. But they would buy just enough stock that they would be able to put a proposal on for the annual meeting for the stockholders to vote on. I'd check into it.
I'm going to do that. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. Ted, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Kirk in Seattle. Hey, Kirk, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Tom, there is no way that a good, patriotic, brave heart like Karl Rove, who has been educated by the likes of Roger Ailes, Pat Buchanan, and Richard Nixon, there's no way that he would allow someone like Ahmadinejad to contribute to our political campaigns. I have absolute faith in the integrity of Karl Rove.
Yeah, okay.
And during the Bush administration, proves his veracity.
Right. He during the Bush administration, he helped bring us illegal wars and covered up Scooter Libby's treason and actually Vice President Cheney outing a CIA agent and all those kind of things. So you absolutely trust him. Okay.
Turd Blossom is beyond reproach.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Turd Blossom is, yeah. That's Kirk, thanks a lot for the call. I get it. And appreciate it. Mike in Texas. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Good afternoon, Dr. Hartman. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine. I'm no doctor, though. So what's on your mind?
You are, in my eyes, smartest man I ever met. Hey, check this out. I hate to beat a dead horse to death on this with old Ted Nugent, but I have a source over at High Times saying in 1977 he gave out that he had an article printed on him. I don't know if you mentioned it or not, where he was a draft dodger and how he actually executed getting out of the draft.
And somebody called in about that yesterday. Refresh my memory.
Oh, that he had defecated himself and, you know, 30 days, didn't bathe, just so he went in front of the review board when his number was called because he had to go appear. And he says, I didn't want to do this, that. And, I mean, he literally made a fool of himself, but yet he wants to hunt and kill and everything. And I'm like, really, guy?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So, and this is the Romney frontman. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I haven't seen the article, but apparently it's real because there's a whole bunch of people talking about it, which doesn't always make things real. But I just got a 30-second cue from Jacob. I'm sorry. So you know, we'll see. In fact, you've got a Ted Nugent clip, don't you, Jacob? Or is that would take more than 30 seconds to drag that thing out? Clip number 3 from yesterday. Because here it is.
If Barack Obama becomes the president in November again, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year.
Yeah. Yesterday I thought he was having his interview with the Secret Service. Turns out it was today. Dead or in jail. Wow. This is real, as I said yesterday, Ted Kaczynski talk. I mean, this is Jim Jones talk. This is David Koresh talk. This is scary stuff. 45 minutes past it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And did I mention that there are shrimp, hundreds of pounds of shrimp that they're pulling out of the Gulf that have no eyes? No eye sockets either. Thank you, BP.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of decay, democracy is coming.
So, breaking news. David Cobb on the line with us, former presidential candidate with the Green Party, now one of the big cheeses at movetoamend.org. I'm not sure what your title is, David.
Well, I am a spokesperson, but most importantly, I'm just one of the people putting my shoulder to the wheel to save the Democratic Republic.
Okay, one of the little cheeses at movetoamend.org.
One of the mini cheeses.
Yeah, there you go, one of many. And you wanted to tell us about a victory.
Oh, Tom, I am so very happy to report to you that today the Vermont State Legislature just did an amazing thing. They helped the clarion call. The Vermont State Legislature voted 92-40 to pass JRS 11. And I want to be clear, this joint resolution actually calls for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to make it clear that corporations do not have constitutional rights and that money is not political speech and can therefore be regulated by local, state, or federal governmental action. It's an enormous victory, and what's so important, Tom, is the distinction that you made in your fantastic book, Unequal Protection. It does not merely deal with campaign finance laws. It does not even just deal with for-profit corporations. This resolution says corporations do not have inherent inalienable constitutional rights of living, breathing human beings, also known as natural persons.
Wow. And it goes on to say that money is property and not speech. And that's something that I've been very concerned. There are some people who are, you know, promoting resolutions and things where they somehow miss that.
Yes. It's really interesting, Tom. I mean, the reality is this, that both money as political speech and corporate constitutional rights are both court-created legal doctrines and acts of supreme judicial activism. The court created those. They were not part of our constitutional framework. The founders never believed that either of those things were true. And getting rid of corporate personhood but still allowing the wealthy to spend unlimited amounts of money would not fix the problem. And frankly, just dealing with campaign finance laws but still allowing corporations to overturn democratically enacted laws that deal with the environment or workers or any other matter of our economy wouldn't fix it. So what I'm so excited about, and a big shout out to State Senator Jenny Lyons, who championed this,
mm-hmm.
And our colleagues at Public Citizen, who helped us, Ben and Jerry's, you know, so this was definitely not a move to amend effort. It was a collaborative effort mm-hmm. of ordinary people. And I do want to say this, Tom, it shows the need to do the grassroots organizing, because Jenny had introduced this bill last year and it went nowhere. But this year we used the town meeting process, got this issue on 64 town meetings. It passed overwhelmingly. It's worth pointing out that people in Vermont tell me this is the largest town meeting concentrated effort that has taken place since the anti-nuclear movement of the 1980s.
Wow.
It just shows the importance of grassroots organizing.
That is spectacular. David Cobb, the organization MoveToAmend.org, this incredible victory in the state of Vermont. David, is this the first state to do the full nine yards?
It is the first state to do the full nine yards. And I've got to say, you know, I know that you you and Louise both spent time in Vermont. Let's mm-hmm. just be honest. It's not because, you know, there's something genetically different about Vermonters. It is a function, though, of the fact that Vermont is a country of scale. In other words, it's small enough that you actually have an opportunity to see your state legislatures and legislators. And the town meeting process really gives Vermonters a sense of political power. They are willing to engage in political issues of the day in a meaningful way. They really think about themselves as members of a democratic republic and act accordingly.
Yeah, and always have. Yeah, Louise and I lived there for 5 years, and in fact, I was back there last year. Senator Sanders and I both gave a talk in is either Montpelier or Burlington on this issue on Citizens United, and Bernie was holding a town hall meeting, and he invited me to come speak, and it was amazing. I mean, Vermonters, they take this stuff seriously, and they showed up, and it's a fine thing. What other states? Where are the other pressure points? Where are there things like this moving along, David Cobb, where people can go to MoveToAmend.org and bring some pressure to bear?
MoveToAmend.org, we're actually moving everywhere, and we continue to stay focused at the local level. I'm happy to report, for example, Salt Lake City just submitted the petitions necessary to get it on the ballot. We just had a tremendous victory in a very conservative area in Wisconsin, West Allis, Wisconsin, during the Republican Party primary, Tom, and we won 70% of the vote. And this is a place that has gone that went Bush big.
This transcends party politics, David. Republicans institutionally or in power may kind of like the fact that corporations can buy them out, but I actually, you know, have talked to a couple of Republican politicians who've said candidly, as Democrats will too, they don't like the fact that they have to spend more than half of everyday fundraising.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the elected officials don't like it. It's demeaning and it's disgraceful. And polling data, as you know, Tom, reflects the fact that somewhere between 75% to 80% of the American people strongly support the Move to Amend position. And those numbers stay more or less true whether they self-identify as a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. This issue has legs. It is broad. It is deep. It crosses not only party affiliation, but even ideology. Principled liberals and principled conservatives agree on the first principles of how the Democratic Republic ought to be operating. Corporations are not people. They do not have constitutional rights. Money is property. It's not political speech. It can be properly regulated to preserve the integrity of our Democratic Republic. It's really that simple.
In fact, not only can it be, David Cobb, it has to be. Because without
those two things,
you can't have it. Yep.
If we're going to save the Democratic Republic, we've got to actually amend the U.S. Constitution to strip the corporation of its illegitimate powers.
Amen.
To corrupt our
Amen.
Election.
David Cobb, MoveToAmend.org is the organization. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for all you do.
Keep up the great work. Up tomorrow, Senator Bernie Sanders will be with us for the first hour, our Brunch with Bernie Hour, national town hall meeting with a guy I think of as America's senator, although having lived in Vermont, I can tell you the Vermonters kind of like him. And anything goes Friday. Thanks so much for being with us. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. MoveToAmend.org.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.